I'm Manila Chan. You're tuned in to Modus Operandi. NATO is on a roll. A recent change of heart by one member state will now open the door for the accession of Sweden into the bloc. Today, we'll examine what this means for the military alliance and the security of Europe, or even the world. All right, let's get into the MO. After much consternation and bluster, Turkey is reversing course, no longer blocking Sweden's application to join the so-called security alliance. The Nordic state is ending its centuries-old tradition of neutrality and joining the U.S. in expanding NATO's borders, encircling the Russian Federation. Initially, Sweden was part of a twofer deal with its neighbor Finland, who shares an 800-mile border with Russia, but suspended its bid when it was clear that the Turks would block its application. So in spring 2023, Finland was officially added to membership. But by summer, after Recep Erdogan narrowly eked out a victory in his re-election bid, he had a sudden change of heart. Critics of Erdogan say the release of Azov POWs was the first lurch into his betrayal of Vladimir Putin. Then came the Sweden decision. His moves met with applause by the West. As a thank you from the U.S., Erdogan will now get new F-16 fighter jets. Now, to break this all down, we are joined by Guy Mettin. He is a former Swiss MP, a journalist, and author of several books. Russie Occident, originally in French, translated to English, is Russia West, and most relevant to the issues unfolding today, a title called Europe's Existential Dilemma, to be or not to be an American vassal. Guy, thank you so much for joining the program. First, what is your general reaction to the news that Sweden's bid to join NATO is moving forward?
The application of Sweden to NATO has been carefully prepared since now a dozen of years. So if you look how in the recent years the supposed provocations of the Russian army have been used in order to mount the Swedish public, the Swedish people, against Russia, this move is now very logical. What is more surprising is the capacity of the Turkish president to resist to such a move in the past year. That was for me the real, good surprise of the past time, because he was able to prevent the application process of the Swedes. I think it was a prowess from Erdogan to be able to resist these huge pressures made by all other members of NATO during more than 13 months. This being said, the recent decision taken by Turkey to authorize the Swedish candidacy to go ahead is really unfortunate, because the Swedish membership, as well as the Finnish one, will not improve the security of the European continent. It will worsen it, because Russia will react, and the game of reactions and counter-reactions will lead to an escalation of the tensions and of the armaments race on the continent. It will not reduce that. So the threat now will grow.
Well, for some time now, Sweden's application to the bloc was halted by one country. That country is Turkey. Recep Erdogan seemed resolute on his demands that Sweden return several PKK members who his country labels as terrorists. He expressed outrage over Quran burning outside of the Turkish embassy in Sweden. He was upset with the U.S. kicking him out of the F-35 Joint Striker jet deal. But these were all remarks made while he was campaigning for re-election. Now that he's narrowly won the presidency again, he reverses course on Sweden. Is there any coincidence here? Did he perhaps betray his voters?
Yes, I think the Turkish move is difficult to analyze because it's too closed and we have not the distance to consider the full context of this reversal decision. But as you mentioned, also it happened just a few days after a Swedish migrant has burned the Quran in the street before the embassy's Turkish embassy in Stockholm. And normally, this act would have provoked a big scandal, even in Turkey. It has provoked a big scandal in all the Muslim world, in Pakistan, in Middle East. And we have seen, for instance, the Human Rights Council in Geneva in the voting in emergency resolution to condemn this act. But despite that, President Erdogan decided not to consider it, not to consider that as a blasphemy, as he used to do in the past, but he changed his mind and decided to have a rapprochement with Ukraine. He received the President Zelensky with all the honors in Ankara. He decided also to release the Azov, the neo-Nazi, neo-Nazis, Azovites, which were detained in Turkey, to release them, and they would be, they had their return to Ukraine now. So it was a series of hits against the Russian balance, traditional east-west balance of Turkey. So in my view, I can explain that because of the economic difficulties of the Turkish economy now. Now, after the elections, Erdogan needs to rebuild his economy, and he wished to get more, let's say, access to Western investment, to Russian capital. And that's why he is now running after the West, probably because he is hoping to get more Western investment in his economy. That's maybe one reason. But there is a second reason, which is not so much explained. It's, in my view, that's the result of the setbacks of Turkey in the Middle East during this last month. If you look at Syria, for instance, as the Arab country have decided during the last summit of the Arab League to reintegrate Syria as a full member of the Arab League, it was a setback for Erdogan, because now Syria is a full member of this league, is fully recognized by the Saudis, by the Emiratis. And Turkey has lost the leverage it had, for instance, in the Idlib province. If you look, Russia has blocked the vote of the Council of Security Council at the United Nations. And now the international aid cannot have access to Idlib because Russian and Syrians wish to recover the full sovereignty on this province, which was supported by Turkey. And also the surge of the Saudi Arabia, of Saudis on the international scene, is also the rising of a potential rival for Turkey. So, and for Russia, the alliance with the OPEC Plus for the oil and gas, so the alliance of OPEC Plus with Saudi Arabia is far more important than any economic exchange with Turkey. And probably Erdogan is feeling that, is disapproving that, is and he tries to raise the stakes with the West on one side and with Russia on the other side. That's why he's getting tougher with Russia. He has been tougher with Russia recently.
Yes, excellent point about getting Western capital into his country and then losing his upper hand with Syria. And what of Russia here? Erdogan has been the sort of counterbalance between the West and their action against Russia due to his seat on NATO. Has he stabbed Vladimir Putin in the back? And does this risk any future renewal of the Black Sea grain deal? I mean, Russia says no for now, but maybe later.
This is another setback for Erdogan because he was the peace broker. He was the agreement broker between Ukraine and Russia and between Russia and the Western country. And it was his big cause. And for him, he could be, you know, more important on the international scene thanks to this agreement. Now it collapsed, and it's another setback for Erdogan. But I don't think that Erdogan is betraying Russia. In my view, as I said, he's getting tougher. He's raising the stakes because he's willing to get more from Russia, from the West, thanks to his new deal with Ukraine, but also with Russia. I don't know now what he's wishing, but he's trying to get something. He cannot betray Russia because the economic relations between Turkey and Russia are too important for Turkey. I mean, for agricultural exports, Russia is buying a lot of agricultural products to Turkey, also because of tourism. Hundreds of thousands of Russians are taking holidays in Turkey because now they are almost forbidden to go in Western Europe. So they go mostly on the Red Sea coast and in Turkey. And also there is the nuclear plant, you know, which was inaugurated by recently, and this nuclear plant was built by Russian. There is also the project of oil and gas hub in Turkey to create this very important hub between Middle East and European countries. And that's important also not only economically, but strategically for Turkey. So I think considering all these elements, Erdogan will not break fully the relations with Russia. He will try to keep a balance, to be the broker of peace, to be the balancing power between both regions, between West and East. But he's trying to improve its position. That's why he's now increasing the tensions with Moscow, in my view.
Coming up next, the United States calls Russia an expansionist empire over its action in Ukraine. But is that really the case? We'll discuss it when we return with Guy Mettin. Sit tight. The MO will be right back.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
We'll be right back.
La pénétration coloniale française, ils ont combattu tous nos rois.
Nam.
Donc les Blancs ont commencé leur colonisation en Afrique, singulièrement au Mali.
Nous avons été meurtris dans notre chair. Nous avons été violés dans notre chair. Nos parents ont été déportés par le colonisateur. Le colonisateur nous a instrumentalisés. Il a fait notre image, notre école à son image.
En réalité, la France a toujours vécu de ses colonies. Et si tu vois que la France elle a la troisième réserve d'or au monde, mais en France, on ne produit pas de l'or.
L'opération Barkhane est venue suite à un complot de la France pour la partition du Mali.
Fier du travail accompli, modeste devant la tâche qui se poursuit, autrement certes, mais toujours ensemble.
Mais depuis le départ de la force Barkhane, le Mali a pris son destin en main. Nous voulons combattre le terrorisme, ramener la paix et la sécurité dans notre pays. Peut-être qu'ils avaient notre agenda.
La France va toujours chercher à faire venir le Mali dans son giron. Mais tant qu'un Malien est vivant, je vous garantis que cette tâche-là sera impossible pour la France.
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. After the latest NATO summit in Vilnius, some members appeared to question the U.S. commitment to the bloc. Would NATO even exist without the United States? Back with us to discuss is former Swiss MP and author of Europe's Existential Dilemma, To Be or Not to Be an American Vassal, Mr. Guy Mettan. So Guy, outside of these Western narratives, according to Russia and much of the global South, the expansion of NATO is precisely why there is conflict in Ukraine now. The broken promises by the U.S. that NATO would not expand even one inch to the east, the broken or perhaps even false Minsk Accords. Yet, just a few months ago, we see Finnish accession to the bloc without much objection by Russia, and now we will probably see Sweden. Russia's entire western border is surrounded by NATO. Does this actually make the world safer, or does this perhaps risk World War III?
No, I don't think the expansion of NATO to Finland and Sweden will increase the security of the continent. I think it will worsen the security situation in Europe, and not only in Europe, but in the world, in the whole world. Because don't forget that Russia is a nuclear power, and the risk of escalation or the risk of an accident, you know, provoked by Ukraine, for instance, the bombing of Zaporizhia nuclear plant or something like that, it could, any kind of provocation can be used in order to provoke such a war or maybe a third world war. That's why I think this expansion is very negative in my point of view. Let's see. I hope this will never happen, and the European or the European leaders will keep their head cool and avoid such escalations. Otherwise, we could not have any more the opportunity to exchange between us if the third world war will happen.
So other than its geographical location or, you know, proximity to Russia, what else does Sweden bring to the NATO table? I mean, what do they have to offer the bloc? Why does the bloc want them?
I think there is two different cases. I think in terms of military, if we speak about military, I don't think the Swedish contribution to the NATO will be decisive. I don't think it will strengthen the alliance. The decision taken in Vilnius summit to divide the continent in three fronts, you know, the northern front, the center front, and the South France sounds good, sounds relevant in theory, but it will increase the coordination tasks. It will also increase the risk of misunderstanding between the three fronts, and it will raise the cost of working together. So, militarily speaking, to get Finland and Sweden in the alliance is not a big deal. But we have to consider the political side of the thing, of this expansion. And in that political sense, I think it was a big success. It was a big success for America, for the United States, to be able to extend the alliance to these northern countries and especially to Sweden, which was since two centuries a neutral country. So in terms of soft power and in terms of just politics, it's a success. Any expansion could be considered as a success. And it's especially a success because it has all this Ukraine affair since now 15 months has been a very good opportunity for United States to vassalize European countries. Now, not only the traditional Western European countries became vassals of the United States, but also the other members like Sweden and Finnish, they integrate the alliance and they decided to by themselves to become vassals. And I think that's for America. It was a big deal. It has been a big political success to be able to do that. And that's why, after the Vilnius NATO summit, President Biden decided to visit Finland, because for the master, it's always a big pleasure to pay a visit to his subservient slave. And as the Finnish people have decided to join the alliance by themselves, it was for Biden just a big joy, very joyful, to pay a visit to them just to observe how they accept to be vassalized.
Now, during this latest NATO summit in Lithuania, there seemed to be a small level of consternation among member states about the U.S. commitment to NATO. There was all this talk about if Donald Trump were to prevail in the U.S. 2024 elections, there's this fear that he might withdraw the U.S. from the bloc, as he threatened to do in his first presidency. Are those fears legitimate? And what would the alliance even look like without the U.S.?
These fears will happen one day. I cannot imagine NATO without the U.S., and I cannot imagine NATO because NATO is the U.S., and the U.S. is the NATO. I don't think that Trump, even if he's elected, will leave NATO. He will try to raise the cost for the Europeans. He will try to get more money from Europeans, as he tried 4 years ago when he was president. But the US, you know, they have so much invested to vassalize the European countries, to vassalize the EU and NATO countries, that they will never abandon NATO, because the NATO is the tool of the US in order to keep their grip on the European continent. And that's why, even if Trump is elected president next year, he will not leave the alliance. He will try to raise the stakes, but he will not leave. And you know, you have also to consider that Trump is also an imperialist. He's also in favor of the US hegemony in the world. If you look at his slogan, Make America Great Again, it's a little bit like the Biden slogan. Biden's slogan was Restore the American leadership. But Make America Great Again. Why to make great again? Just in order to be to make United States more able to dominate the world. The only difference between, if you look, for instance, during the Cold War, the Republican presidents, such as Reagan or Bush or Eisenhower, were as Russophobes, were as anti-communist and anti-Soviets as much as the Democrats. So there were no big difference between Republican and Democrat president during the Cold War. It's always the case today. The only difference between Trump and Biden is that Trump, for Trump, China is the main rival. China is the priority. China has to be deleted, has to be defeated in the view of Trump. For the Democrats, they want to destroy Russia before to attack China. But in the case of Trump, he wants to defeat China, and after, he thinks Russia will collapse by itself. That's the only difference of priority, but not the difference of goals.
Guy Maeton, thank you so much for that great analysis.
Thank you to you, and wish you all the best.
All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.